Right. I'm very excited to talk to you today because I am going to be talking about what in my Bible is labeled the parable of the prodigal son. And I've been reading the Bible for years, like 50 years. And there's two things I would say about reading the Bible. The first thing is if you read it yourself regularly, you will find God because he's in there. The second thing is there will be a lot of stuff you don't understand. And the thing is, there's a lot of stuff that nobody understands. Because the Bible was written thousands of years ago, and it wasn't written in English. So unless you are reading it in the original Hebrew and Greek, and if you have a time machine and can go back in time, you're going to not understand stuff. But that doesn't stop us finding God in the Bible. And this parable I love talking about because until really recently, I didn't understand loads of it. And it's a parable that we tell to children because we think it's really easy to understand. But what I want to show you is that it's not necessarily saying what you think it's saying. So when we look at this, we're going to go through it verse by verse. I'm not going to read the whole thing because I think you probably all know it anyway, but it's going to be up there if you want to follow. You can also grab a church Bible, and it's Luke chapter 15, starting at verse 11. So if you want to follow, you can. Now, one thing when we look at this that we need to be aware of is the culture of the day, because this is a story that was told about 2,000 years ago. And they would understand things that we don't understand. Now, if I tell you a story about a friend of mine, this isn't true, a friend of mine got married and it was raining and some stupid person, as she went into church, threw confetti over her. And she was so upset she cried. Okay? Now, if you are English, in your mind, you will imagine someone wearing a white wedding dress because that's what we do in England. Now, I didn't tell you that because I know that you would know that. You would know that confetti is usually coloured. So wet confetti on a white dress is going to ruin the dress. And you will know that as she's arriving at the church, she won't have had all her photos done yet. Okay, now, I didn't tell you any of that, but you would know it because you're English. Now, this is a story that Jesus told 2,000 years ago to Jewish people. So we need to know about the culture. And as we go through it, I will explain bits that aren't in here because the people it was told to already knew it. Okay? Now, we also really ought to be reading it in Greek. We've done a bit of Bengali this morning. I am not going to teach you Greek because I don't know Greek myself. I could do it in Mandarin for you, but that wouldn't be very helpful. Okay? But I'll point out some bits that matter because of the Greek. What I want you to think about while we go through it are the people that are concerned with this story. Okay? So as we go through, keep in mind this. First of all, keep in mind who the story was originally told to. Okay, Jesus told the story. It's not true, it didn't happen. But he told this story to Pharisees and scribes. Okay, and he told it to them because they were criticizing him for eating with sinners. And actually, they were right. Their law said that somebody that was holy, a holy, upright, good Jew, wouldn't eat with sinners. Okay, wouldn't go into their home, wouldn't eat with them. So they were kind of right by their law, and they criticized Jesus for that, and he tells them three stories, and we're going to look at the last one. So keep that in mind, who the story was told to. I also want you to keep in mind who's in the story. So the story is about a man and two sons. Okay, so keep them in mind, man, two sons. Also keep in mind the people who are in the story that we won't be aware of, but those first listeners would. Because actually, this story is about the community. Now, this is the first thing I got wrong. When I was well, I've always had this image. When I think of the story of the prodigal son, I have this picture of lots of land, sort of like American plains, with a house and a long road going off into the distance and the father running down the road to meet his son. Okay, scrub that out, because that's wrong, okay? In those days, people who owned farmland didn't live on the farm. They lived in communities, okay? So now, in your head, imagine a small community, houses all very close together, and we know they were close together because on the Sabbath, they weren't allowed to carry anything to their neighbor, but they could pass it out of their window to their neighbor on the other side of the street. Okay, so there's a lot of people in this story. Just remember them. The last people I want you to remember is us, because somebody, Luke, put this, wrote it down, and it survived till now. So there's something in this story God wants to say to us today. Okay, so keep your ears open to what God wants to say to you. Right, we're going to start. So, verse 11, okay? And he said, that's Jesus, there was a man who had two sons. And the younger of them said to his father, Father, give me the share of property that's coming to me. Right, so think about the people. You've got the father. You've got this son. What he is asking in the culture of the day is appalling. Okay? That would just not be done. So people listening to this, heard this story, they're instantly thinking, oh, he's a bad one. That's really bad. Okay. Then we read on. And he divided his property among them. Not just the one son who asked, both of them. Now again, the people listening to them, to this story, would think, well, that's terrible. That second son, the one who didn't ask, is it on? Okay. Right, so the second son, who didn't ask, should have refused his portion, okay? But he didn't. It says that the property was divided between them. And what we know is that this second son was bad, but was trying to kind of like, well, it's not my fault, I didn't ask for it, okay? So think about how that applies through the centuries. This idea that, well, I didn't do it, so it's not my fault. You know, I'll accept it, it's there. You know what, in Nazi Germany, how many Germans said, oh, I didn't make the laws. You know, these Jews are all being taken off to the camps, but, well, I don't really know what's going on, and I didn't make the laws. You know, how many of us today buy cheap clothing? And we've heard rumors that clothing is produced by basically slaves in Bangladesh. And how many of us say, well, I didn't buy them. I wouldn't set up slave shops, and they're cheap, you know. It's not me running the shop, not me making people slaves. You know, I save a bit of money if I buy those. How many of us think it's okay? Well, in this story, that's what the second son did, and the people listening would know it wasn't okay. So then we have... Oh, the other thing is, where it says he divided his property between them, in that day, that was actually illegal for the son to ask that. So the father, remember there's a whole community here, the father would have had to make it seem as though that was his idea. Okay, so the father is covering for the son. The son's done something wrong, the father is covering for him. Okay. Then it says, not many days later, the younger son gathered all he had. Now, you need to know a bit of Greek here. I won't tell you the word because I can't pronounce it. But the word that's used for gathered all he had basically means he liquidized the assets. He turned it all into cash. Okay? Appalling thing to do. Everybody listening would be like, oh, that's bad. Okay. Not many days later, the younger son gathered all he had and took a journey to the far country. Now, what he'd done was culturally really bad. So he's not going to stay in this close community because everyone's going to be disapproving of him. So off he goes to a far country. And it says there, he squandered his property in reckless living. Now, that word that I've got, reckless, you might have a different word, doesn't say immoral, okay? Keep that in mind. Doesn't say immoral. He was stupid, okay? And he lost all his money. Right, now, a bit of culture. What you need to know is in those days, in the Jewish culture, if you had family money, you could not lose that to non-Jews, to Gentiles. Okay, that was a really bad thing. You never lost money to Gentiles. And they felt so strongly about this that if you did, you'd be cut off from the community. And they had a ceremony. It's called a Kazazar ceremony, which is just a brilliant name. And what they used to do is if someone lost money to Gentiles, they would go outside of the community with a big earthen jar full of burnt nuts and corn, and they would smash it, and then they would all shout, you know, if it's Jack that's lost the money, they say, Jack is cut off from his people. And that's it. Jack could no longer be in the community. Okay? So huge thing. So everyone listening to the story knows this. And they know that this son, the thing he must not do is lose that money to the Gentiles. Okay? They all know that. Big, big thing. Then we read, and when he'd spent everything, a severe famine rose in that country, and he began to be in need. Well, lost the money. So he went and hired himself out to one of the citizens in that country, who sent him into the fields to feed pigs. Okay, Jews don't eat pork. Jews don't farm pigs. So now everyone listening to this story knows the son has lost the family money to Gentiles. Okay? Really bad. This son will be cut off from his community. And it says, and he was longing to be fed with the pods that the pigs ate, and no one gave him anything. Now, this is also important, and I missed it completely the first time round. The only way the son can go back to his community and be accepted as a Jew is to earn the money to reap, to kind of keep that money in the family still. The son needs to earn money because then he's paying for his mistake. And where it says no one gave him anything, I always thought that meant food. It doesn't. It means he wasn't earning anything. He was not earning money to save to repay that debt. Okay, next bit I got wrong in verse 17. When he came to himself, now, I thought that meant when he was sorry, but it doesn't, okay? Now, the word that's used has been translated in all sorts of different ways, and different people think it means different things, but it's almost like he remembered who he was. You know, like, I remembered I was British, okay? It's that kind of idea. Well, he got smart. He's not sorry. Okay? And the people listening to Jesus tell this story knew he wasn't sorry. He came to himself. He said, how many of my father's hired servants, these are paid workers. The father had slaves. We know that from the Greek. These were the paid servants. How many of my father's hired servants have more than enough bread, and I perish here with hunger? Okay, he's starving. I will arise, go to my father, and I will say to him, Father, I've sinned against heaven and before you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Treat me as one of your hired servants. Okay, he wants a job. He wants to earn money. His father has servants. Now, I always thought these words, Father, I've sinned against heaven and before you, meant the son was sorry. But it doesn't. Remember who the story is told to. It's told to the scribes and Pharisees. Scribes and Pharisees knew the scriptures, the Old Testament. They knew them really well. They especially knew the story of the Exodus and the Jewish people being taken out from Egypt. They'd know that. They'd know it by heart. Now, these words that Jesus says, "Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you," is a quote. It's a direct quote from Exodus chapter 10, verse 16. And it is a quote of what Pharaoh said when he wanted Moses to just take the plague away. Okay? Pharaoh said to Moses, "I have sinned against heaven and before you." It's a direct quote. Everybody listening to the story that Jesus was telling would know the prodigal son isn't sorry. He just wants to get out of a really bad situation that he's got himself into. So he gets up. So in verse 20, so he arose and he came to his father. Okay, he's going back. Now he will know that when he goes back, if the people in the community see him coming, there will be this kazazar ceremony and they will cut him off and he can't go in. Okay? Everybody listening knows that. It says, while he was still a long way off, his father saw him and felt compassion and ran and embraced him and kissed him. Now, two things here. First of all, Jewish men don't run, okay? And the Pharisees listening to this story would know Jewish men don't run. They wore long robes. To run, you had to hoik your skirts up and show your bare legs and run. Very undignified, okay? So we have this picture of this father really embarrassing himself in order to save his son, okay? The second thing is, he saw him a long way off. He saw him before he got to the community, before anyone could do this ceremony that would cut the son off. And by running and meeting him, he was saving his son from that. Okay. And then it says, he ran and embraced him and kissed him. The son hasn't said anything. Okay. He's not welcoming him back because the son is sorry. Well, the son wasn't sorry anyway. He just wants him back. And that's, the people listening to this would be like, wow, that's really something after the way he's been treated. And the son said to him in verse 21, "Father, I've sinned against heaven and before you. I'm no longer worthy to be called your son." Okay, prepared speech doesn't mean he's sorry. Now, in my Bible and in most manuscripts, it stops there. He can't carry on with the whole, "I want to work for you and earn money so I can pay it back and be accepted." He just stops there. He accepts the love the father is giving him. And the father said to his servants, "Quickly bring the best robe, put it on him, put a ring on his hand and shoes on his feet. Bring the fattened calf and kill it. Let us eat and celebrate." Now step back and see what's happening here. You've got the father who has done nothing wrong, but all he's done is save his son. You've got the son, who's a disaster, okay, broken all these rules and behaved appallingly. The son is a sinner. The father is going to kill a calf and have a feast with the son. The father is going to eat with the son. Now think back. Why is Jesus telling the story? He's telling the story because the Pharisees and the scribes said you shouldn't eat with sinners. And now, in this story, the father is about to eat with a sinner. Isn't it clever? I just think, wow, Jesus was really clever. You know, it's like, I've never seen that before. And why is he having the feast? It says, "For my son was dead and is alive. He is lost and is found." Now notice, he doesn't say the son has said he's sorry. The son is putting it right. All the work is the father. The feast is because the father has done it all. And he's really pleased that the son has accepted what he's done. And it says, and they began to celebrate. Should I finish or go on? Okay, all right. So, we have the son back with the father. He's accepting what the father has done for him. But then we have the older brother. Now, I always felt a bit sorry for the older brother because I always thought, yeah, well, I never did anything particularly bad and I would be a bit miffed if someone, you know, especially with my brother, if my brother had done this. Okay, so we have Now his older son was in the field, and he came and drew near to the house, and he heard music and dancing. So again, we know it was a whole community. It's not, this isn't about three people, it's about a whole community. So the son, he called one of the servants and asked what this meant. And the servant said to him, "Your brother has come, your father has killed the fattened calf because he received him back safe and sound." Okay, so the older son now knows the situation. Now, in our culture, this would be a bit like if there was some big family celebration, maybe a wedding going on, okay? And then the older son says, but it says in verse 28, "But he was angry and refused to go in." Now that's huge in the culture of the day. That's really rude. That's like a brother refusing the wedding invitation, saying, "Oh, I don't much like who she's marrying, I'm not going to that." Okay? It's rude. And the people listening to the story would know that was really bad. What the older son should have done is gone in and shared with his father's joy. But he doesn't. So what happens next? He refused to go in, but his father came out and entreated him. Again, that was really embarrassing. You know, that's like if we have a wedding reception and we're all eating, and the father of the bride leaves the wedding reception to go out and talk to someone in the family that's having a luau. Okay, that's really embarrassing. Everybody would know. If you're hosting a party, you don't leave the party. But the father did. He humiliated himself in order to go and reason with his son. So his father came out and entreated with him. But he answered, "Look, all these years I've served you, I've never disobeyed your command. But you never gave me a young goat that I might celebrate with my friends." Not quite true, the implication there, because the party's not for the brother. The party's for the father. Okay? "But when this son of yours comes, who's devoured your property with prostitutes..." Jesus never said in the beginning of the story how the son lost the money. The older son here was just exaggerating. Okay? He's saying, "Oh, yeah, well, we all know how he spent that money." Actually, we don't. Okay? So, bit of exaggeration there. "You killed the fattened calf for him." Again, he didn't kill the fattened calf for the son. The party was because the father was so pleased that the son had come back. And then we've got the father's response. He said to him, "Son, you are always with me, and all that is mine is yours. It was fitting to celebrate and be glad, for your brother was dead and is alive. He was lost and is found." Now again, that's so clever, because that's Jesus talking to the Pharisees and the scribes. And we don't know whether the older son says, "Oh yeah, no, you're right, I'll come in," or whether he doesn't. And what Jesus was saying to the Pharisees and the scribes was, actually, God is really pleased when sinners come to him. And he has done everything that's necessary so people can come to him. So are you going to come to him? He's kind of giving the Pharisees a challenge. And if we look at it today, this was written here for us. The challenge is there for us. God has done everything. Okay? Sometimes we feel like, well, I can't come to God because I drink too much, or I can't come to God because I swear too much, or, oh, I need to sort out that relationship. God says, just come. I've done it all. Just come. I want to welcome you back. And when we understand that, when we feel that love, that's what changes us. And again, I never really got the whole love thing. I used to kind of think, well, I can worship God and glorify God, but ooh, love, that's what you do with like your friends and relatives. But, you know, reasonably recently, I've really felt God's love. Actually, since my operation, I haven't been able to do anything. And then God helps me do stuff. And if we really feel that love, then we want to share that with other people. You know, Hannah's now going to come and talk about Bangladesh. If we know what it is to be loved by God, then it changes us so that we then want to love and care about other people around us and in other countries. Thank you for listening.
actually be caught, couldn't it, when you think about it? It's a parable more about the Father than it is about the Son. It's about this immense grace of God. This scandalous grace of God. Paul said that, didn't he, when he wrote a letter. It's this scandalous grace of God. To the Greeks, it's a scandal that anybody would love like that. And isn't that beautiful? So that's what it's about. And that heart of God is what drives Tear Fund or BMS or any organisation. And it should be that heart of God that drives us. That says to a lost world, God is waiting for you, irrespective of where you've been and what you've done. Yeah, that's what it's all about. We're going to sing a song that just echoes that. We'll just sing one song, as a filled with compassion. It's a bit of an older song, but it's a lovely song about the heart of God for people. Heart of the Father for the lost. Let's just stand and sing that before Hannah comes to talk to us.